Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. As I said before, this is your hour. And my plea at the beginning of the program is, please don't wait until the middle or the end of the program to give us a call. And that's because very often we can't get to those calls because we get a whole bunch of people at the end calling up. And, you know, we'd love to get all of you taken care of. And one of the ways you could do that is to start right now. And remember our mantra, the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. And today, by the way, we are loaded for bear here. We have got a lot of expertise in studio with us. Mr. Gary Baker, of course. Ed Rudell and Cal Carson are here, our regular tech team. But in addition to that, our two folks from Flint, Baker College in Flint, are going to be with us in studio. That's Doug Witten, who is a professor there, the director of cyber defense and computer science and computer information systems, and one of his students, Greg Kemp, who was part of their championship cyber defense team, won state championships 2 years in a row. They're going to be here as well for a while to help us answer questions.
So you can call in and ask how to hack something?
There you go.
What is
you
Tor?
You put a grin on his face quickly.
What is Tor?
Hey, that dark web thing, how do I get there?
I've been trying to hack my toaster to see if I can get my bread out faster.
We had a couple of listener questions, quite a few this week. One of them was from Henry, and him and I have been, Edward was his name, and he basically has an outbuilding, a barn.
Oh, yes.
And it's 200 feet away from his house, and his wireless signal from his house doesn't get there. His internet provider is Frontier, which is a DSL, apparently. Mm-hmm. And he tied himself in knots just trying to wonder how he can extend that networking out to his pole barn. And so I sent him an article that I found from PC Magazine that listed basically 10 different things you can consider when to extend your wireless signal. Mm-hmm. Some of them is basically getting a directional antenna. Something as simple as relocating the wireless router in your house to the one end of the building of the house to another. Maybe taking it out of the basement. But it even went a little more elaborate than that. He could plug a cable into the back of his modem, his mm-hmm. cable modem, and run it out to the pole barn, because Ethernet. The 10 base T networking cable that we're all used to seeing.
The blue one.
Yeah, the blue. basically, will go 100 meters.
100 meters, which is a little over 300 feet.
A little over 300
feet. Or a repeater, right?
He can get a wireless repeater and stick it in his garage. I mean, that's mm-hmm. an option. But another thing you can do is you can do Ethernet over your electrical lines in the house.
That I found fascinating. I followed up that article that you had there, and there are some. Matter of fact, the equipment doesn't cost that much.
No, everything, it's under $100.
Yeah.
I like the analogy. If you know someone that's an electrician, as far as the network cables, remember when they wire buildings, they have these big old cardboard things, and if there's less than 500 foot in those spools,
they throw them away.
Yeah,
because they're wiring from one end of the building, and they're doing all the cubicles and stuff like that for telephones and networking. So if you know a networking guy, these little spools they may only have 200 foot in them. That's perfect for my house.
Sure, whatever.
I just thought about something. He said in that email that he is with like Frontier or cable company.
Yeah, Frontier,
like that.
I think it's, yeah.
Yeah, I think I just call him up and say, you know something? I want to put a TV out in my pole barn and need a drop.
Oh.
I wonder if that would cost him anything.
Maybe a little, but maybe not much.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And maybe it depends if you're a do-it-yourself.
Maybe not.
Some people like paying people to do things. I like doing things myself. Either way,
but you also meant there's another thing, too. Often people who, put a barn like that out there will put a conduit.
Oh, he had a conduit. Yeah, in the email, he said he had a 4-inch conduit with a stringer, or it's a string, that actually went from the barn to his house. And if you know anything about running electrical wires, when you pull a cable through a piece of conduit or a PVC or a underground cable, you always tie another string to it. So when you're pulling your cable through, or electrical wires or communication or fiber, you're pulling a new piece of string with it as well.
Yeah, that way you can put it reverse the process and put the next one in from the other side.
Exactly.
So those are some suggestions for some of you who are in a situation situation like that in a rural area where you can extend your signal out to an outbuilding. I love the using the electrical system. Why is it that the electrical system, I'm not an electrician, okay, don't understand the principles involved in it, but why is it that the power itself doesn't interfere with the internet signal, that you're sending down a line?
Well, because you're just using the copper wires and you're putting a high frequency over the copper wires, basically.
Yeah,
so
frequency.
Think of it as putting an FM signal on your copper wires and extending it, to the house, to the other
or
end of the house.
Or you could think of it like it works on the internet itself. You've got a cable coming in there, that Ethernet cable, but you've got like hundreds of protocols on that. You got different ports for different things. Mail goes on one port, the web is on another port and stuff like that. So all these multiple things can run on it at the same time. Now it's not a physical presence in the sense of what you were looking for, like electricity and a radio signal, but it's basically the same principle.
And think of it this way. You remember in the old days of AM, and it's still the case, we used to have listeners around the area because WJR is one of the big, what is it, Big 6 or Big 8?
Big 12.
Big 12.
The original 12 superstation.
So people in the area that were around the antenna by WJR, they would actually pick up the signal and hear WJR through their porcelain tub.
Yes.
When they take a shower.
We had a listener for a station down in, they were down river, apparently, near one of the towers down there. They were getting the station on their bathtub, on the faucets.
Yes.
It was coming through.
50,000 watts and it sounded like a million.
And they were picking me up there. All right, folks, let me repeat that number again and urge you, because I know there are folks out there who are sitting on questions and wondering, should I call? Of course you should.
And Foster, we want easy questions, right?
Yes.
Ones we can answer.
We'll start off with that, but we got some extra folks to help us in studio here. Not only Cal and Ed and Gary and myself, but we also have Doug Witten, who is the Director of Cyber Defense and Computer Science up at Baker College's Flint campus, and with him one of his star students, Greg Kemp, who was a member of the championship cyber defense team. So lots of folks in here that help you with your problem, and the way you get that problem handled is by calling us at 800-859-0957. Once again, 800-859-0957. Give us a ring and we'll get to work on your problem. Thank you so much for joining us here for this second hour of the program. We're having a whole lot of fun just kind of swapping stories in here about help that people have received from the people who are in studio. And we'd like to hand out some of that help this afternoon, or this evening rather. And we can do that simply by having you give us a call with your question at 800-859-0957. Again, that's 800-859-0957. Our lines are open right now. People are once again holding their breath, waiting for the program to get a little further on. And your question is that's the one we want to hear from.
And as they say in Chicago, call early, call often.
Now, one of the things I was just approached for a birthday party last week is our wireless printer stopped working. And or it's working with mine and not working with my wife's. And some of the basic troubleshooting steps for that are just basically go to the manufacturer's website, download the manufacturer's installation, and run through the setup again. Delete the printers you already have defined, and then start from scratch again. And a lot of times when you start from scratch with the printers, it requires you to plug in the USB cable so that your computer can have a communication with the external printer. Mm-hmm. And then once that's done, then the setup software will then communicate with the printer to attach it to the wireless network if that's one of the options. Mm-hmm. And but basically start from scratch again.
You know, I think people kind of get spooked when they get rid of their printer. You know, think, oh my goodness, what have I done here? You know, and you really haven't done anything to your printer.
Right.
You're just kind of erasing the blackboard and you're starting over again with that installation software and perhaps fixing something that got fouled up, in the installation in the first place.
Yeah, but a lot of times I've found with these wireless printers is what happens is that the router and the printer usually experience some sort of power interruption. And then what happens is that the router wakes back up, but the printer doesn't wake up fast enough. And so the router goes, handing out addresses and says, hey, you take this, and you take this, and you take this. And the printer comes back by and says, hey, I was 13. Well, I'm sorry, 13 was taken. You can be 14 now. And then I go to my computer, and I want to print, and I've been pointing to 13. Now it's 14, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't know that it's 14. You have to go back in and tell it to adjust it again.
And a lot of the manufacturers do now is that they include the software so that it goes out there and sniffs over the network and then finds out what the address is and then reassigns it. Yes, Doug.
Yeah, in the real world, what you do is set up a static. And that's one of the ones that you'd actually set up a static address.
And I'm an advocate. I try that all the time and for people. And yes, exactly. I prefer to set up statics rather than relying on your computer or the driver software to every time your computer comes up to go out there and sniff and listen for the printer. And, you know, that takes up resources. It slows down the startup of your computer. It slows down the networking.
Another thing that you can do, too, is make sure that your router and your printer, if it's not a laser printer, it's on a UPS unit. So, therefore, if they do have a power situation, they won't fall and they'll continue to talk anyway.
Yep. So, you know, a lot of people have the little printout, the requirements or whatever, and it has the IP on there. If you don't set it as a static address, you're right. It just keeps changing. Right. The DHCP will dole out a new one.
Doug, hang on a second, and let's back up a second. When you're talking about the little printout that we have with the IP address on it, that's the one that when is that the test page sometimes?
Test page.
Your configuration page.
Or the configuration page, and it says IP, right?
Exactly.
Now, when you say make that a static address, how do you do that? What does that mean?
Well, there's a way of setting it so that you're not a DHCP or a dynamic host control protocol, which dulls out the IP addresses once the router and everything sees it. If you set it to static, there's a way to set inside the configuration of the printer itself.
Okay.
So I'm going to give it this. In other words, I would give it this address each and every time.
Mm-hmm. And that's what you were talking about, Ed, before, right?
Yeah, the manufacturers really don't do that because that's a lot of work for home users to set up. Mm-hmm. We as IT professionals will do that because we know how to do that. Mm-hmm. But the manufacturers, they just, just do this, run our software, and go ahead. But when you're in the corporate environment, you do static addresses.
But the advantage, it sounds like, there are advantages for the home user to do this. Am I right, Doug?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And what is the main advantage to that?
Well, you wouldn't have to go out and find out your router would automatically know where it's at. It would also go out and pull if it's up or not. It would know that. It wouldn't if the IP address has changed.
And what happens, most routers are start at 100 as an example. So I always give my printers .50 as the last octet for the address because my router's never going to give out an address of anything. Okay. You know, it's always going to start at 100 and then work its way up. Right. It's 50 safe. So. Okay.
Or to put it in layman's terms, instead of having an address that changes, like you're staying in Motel 6 today, and then 2 weeks later you're going to be in Red Roof Inn, this way you actually buy a residence, and that address stays that way all the time until you move.
And you're liable to have less problems then that are involved in that.
Yeah, this is all great, and it is the preferred method that a lot of IT people do. But you have different manufacturers of printers, and every printer you set the static IP slightly different. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be hairy for home users.
And I thought it was the other way around. I thought you actually set the static IP in the router, not in the printer.
In the printer.
No, in the router you can actually set up a reservation.
Mm-hmm.
So
you can reserve
an address. And that's what I've done with my most recent Linksys printers, is that whenever it sees this device, this printer, give it this address. I want it to have this address every time it powers up. And that works out great.
I have no reservations.
I'm sorry.
All right, here's the number again. You got a reservation, folks. If you want to get some advice, you can hear the kind of advice that's being doled out here today by some very expert people. 800-859-0957 is the phone number. And Danielle, who is our expert engineer, thank you very much for standing by. She is going to be answering phones and is looking forward to talking to you again. 800-859-0957.
And I know for the last 5 minutes, we've done a ton of geek speak, and it probably was crazy as heck. But you know what I found out, and I'm not trying to put us out of business or anything like that, but all the stuff that we talked about on how to set up a printer like that, you can go and search on YouTube.
Yep.
And you can find videos. Look at multiple videos, because there are some people out there that are really good at what they're doing, and there are some people out there selling snake oil. But look at a number of different videos and stuff on YouTube. Learn how to do it. You'd be surprised. You have more capabilities as a computer user than you give yourself credit for. And it's just a matter of knowledge giving you the ability to do it.
And there are often a number of different kinds of solutions that are offered on YouTube. And Ed, you've said this before, that you can get some, you know, little teenager who wants to, you know, talk forever about something, or you can get somebody who is maybe, let's say, a little bit more articulate in the way that they communicate. Look through the different, there may be like three or four answers that are there. Have you found that out, Doug, in terms of...
Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think that people are often able to find somebody who speaks their language. And, hey, we do have somebody here. Let's see. Let's talk to Paul from Lake Orion is with us. Welcome to Paul, to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Yeah, my problem is my internet is in the middle of my house. I got one of those basement living rooms where you walk down from the kitchen.
Yeah.
And it's got block wall.
Yep.
And now my two TVs upstairs in the bedroom, they have built-in Wi-Fi in the TV, and my TV downstairs doesn't, but I have a Blu-ray DVD. I don't know if I can tell you what kind of company I go through.
No, well, you mean your service provider? Yeah, what do you have in terms of...
I have AT&T.
Okay, AT&T.
Wireless.
Mm-hmm.
And now the TV downstairs, for some reason, at 6 o'clock and on, it seems like It'll shut my program down, and it'll just show loading on there.
Ah.
Like it's trying to reboot.
Yeah, it's buffering.
But the TV's upstairs, I never have any problems with that. And the modem is closer to the one downstairs.
That's interesting.
Now, that is interesting, yeah.
Now, did you have to attach a receiver box to that television down there to talk to that modem?
I got a Blu-ray DVD player,
Oh, and the Blu-ray actually has the Wi-Fi and the applications for Netflix or whatever for streaming.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's having difficulty with your wireless network. So one of the things I could think of is a lot of wireless routers at home provide multiple frequencies. You can attach to the 2.4,
right,
or you can attach to the 5 gigahertz channel. So you might want to find out which wireless channels you're actually attaching to. What I did on my home is I named mine, you know, Ed or, you know, whatever, or home, 5 gigahertz, home, 2.4 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And because some devices I have only can attach a 2.4 gigahertz because they're older devices.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
Or it could be.
I mean, that's just the first thought.
Or it could be that case where you say this happens in the evening every day?
Yeah.
Around 6 o'clock, he said.
Yeah. Does anyone else live in the house with you?
Yeah.
What type of cell phone do they have?
They got smartphones.
Yeah. Are they older smartphones or newer smartphones?
Newer.
Okay. Newer than yours?
Oh, yeah, I got it. Mine ain't even a smartphone.
He's got the old one.
I'm a man of the house. I don't get that good stuff. The women get the good stuff.
Say what now?
He says the women get the good stuff.
Yeah, of course.
And
my kids.
It's the old rule. Ain't mama happy, ain't nobody happy.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, one of the reasons why I was asking that is that if you happen to have older devices in your house, your network is going to slow down to the oldest device.
Right. Yeah.
And so therefore I was thinking that at 6 o'clock somebody came home, they have an older phone or something like yours, their Wi-Fi is turned on and it's slowing the network down in the basement where that television is, and that's the reason why you're getting that problem.
Hey Paul, hang on the line. We're gonna see if we can dig around a little bit more and have some other answers for you, okay? So hold the phone.
Yeah.
We'll get right back to you. And by the way, as you can hear, there's room for you here at 800-859-0957. Again, that's 800-859-0WJR, if you prefer typing it in that way. We'll be back to take your calls in just a moment. Let me just remind you, by the way, that as of Sunday night, I post the entire program, our podcast, which is the 2 hours of the show. I post that And you can go to internetadvisor.net and either download it there to listen at your leisure later on, or you can subscribe to the Internet Advisor by going to iTunes. You also find us on the podcastdetroit.net .com network. That's podcastdetroit.com network. Right now, however, our phone number is 800-859-0957. We have lines open. No need to wait to send us an email later on this week. And I know we'll typically, after the show is over, we get a bunch of emails that come in. And you could get some answers right now with the help of our two folks who are in studio with us from Baker College Flint campus. And that's Doug Witten, who is the director of cyber defense and computer science up there. And also Greg Kemp, who is with us. Greg is a student and a member of their cyber defense team, which has won back-to-back championships on the state level. So let's go back out to Paul from Lake Orion. Paul, thanks for being with us. Some points that you guys wanted to make. Greg, you were talking about some things that can affect the performance of routers.
So if you're on the 2.4 gigahertz frequency, like we said, things like microwaves and cordless phones can interfere with that. So if you could check, a lot of the times you can find out what frequency the device supports by just Googling the model number. If you find out that it is on 2.4 gigahertz, maybe you'll want to upgrade to a 5 gigahertz model.
Mm-hmm. Or hardwire it, yeah.
Or the other thing, because I'm a big believer in this, if this is happening on a regular basis with a device hooked up to AT&T's equipment, you should call AT&T, make an appointment to have them come out about the time that that normally happens, and have them resolve that issue, because you're paying a monthly fee for a service.
That's right.
You might as well have it work.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I want to ask you, is this statement very true, that because things like that happen at night because more people are home using the satellite services in the sky?
That's different than the issue.
Yeah.
The way that started out was for cable use, because you're on a wire and you're on a segment of wire with cable. The more people that are hitting that piece of wire will slow it, could theoretically slow it down.
Yeah, like an entire subdivision could slow down. Mm-hmm.
But from
access.
A satellite standpoint, that doesn't happen because you have a one-on-one relationship with the satellite. And it's designed to send a signal down to millions of people, and it spreads that load out. So in the case of if you're getting it from a satellite, it's not an issue. If it's coming across a wire, then yes, that's a possibility.
And plus, you said the TVs upstairs were not experiencing the slowness while the one downstairs was.
Yeah.
So one of the things you could do, I was looking at this, I think there's a way that you can find out the modem that you have, your AT&T modem, and you could find out how many devices are attached to it. So magically, you could have this brought up on your PC, and then you can access your wireless router at home from AT&T, and it'll show a device list. That's one of the few things that AT&T will allow you to view on your device. They don't let you change the configuration, but they'll show you how many devices.
Yeah.
And wouldn't you know, that's when your daughter comes home with her old handheld gaming system.
Yeah. Oh, I got you. Yeah.
or phone, and is streaming Netflix on her phone, and then that could be interfering with your
Cal, one last thing, and then we have Elaine from Bloomfield when I got to.
Do you have a password on that system?
Yes, there is a password.
Good,
on
because
that,
just in case your signal is bleeding over to the next door neighbor and they're using your bandwidth when they come home in the evening.
No, that sort of thing. Yeah. Now there's a password, and we've had AT&T come out and give us a new box after a storm and that too. So
have them come out at the time when you have that problem.
Yeah.
And then let them see what the real thing is, because maybe it's something they have to tweak in the box, or maybe they can suggest something you can do in the house to be able to make that work.
Okay, Paul, thanks so much. I hope we've given you some help here with the different solutions that we've been offering. Again, our number is 800-859-0957. Lots of advice to hand out here. Elaine from Bloomfield, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How are you?
I'm great. I'm glad I'm talking to you.
Very good.
Turned the computer on today, desktop, and normally you would get a area where you enter in your password.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't show. and then my email icons were not on there. I had all kinds of icons that I had never, ever installed or used. So I called my service people,
yeah,
and they went through it and said I had a system corruption. So, okay.
Let me back up for just a second, Elaine. First of all, if you can, are you anywhere close to your radio?
Yeah, shut it off.
Yeah, just turn it down because it'll be distracting you with
okay.
the delay, okay?
Yeah.
Elaine, okay.
So it was a desktop computer.
Desktop
she powers
computer.
It up, didn't get the username and password, but she gets some sort of desktop, but all the icons are weird.
Now,
yeah.
How old is the computer?
I would say about 4 years old.
Okay. Elaine, when you say you call your service people, who are you talking about?
Geek Squad.
Okay, this is Geek Squad you're calling. You're not... All right. Because the reason I asked that question is I would be afraid if you had been talked into using some sort of service that wasn't a legitimate one. But you, you've got a legitimate service.
Okay, so what happened after you spoke to them? And...
Well, then they took over remotely, and they came up with this thing that my system was corrupted.
Okay, so they were still able to remotely access your computer.
Yep.
Okay, go ahead.
So then... they said, well, I have to take it in for service. And at that point, they said the only thing I could do that they could not control was to do a system restore.
Mm.
Well, the last time we used a computer was yesterday afternoon, and I did a system restore, and it wouldn't restore.
Well, how about restoring back to earlier dates? I mean, sometimes you have to go restore to Friday, to Thursday, or Wednesday.
Uh-huh.
And you might have to, you know, until you find this restore point. And what it sounds like is you have a corrupt user profile. So a portion of the hard drive is damaged or corrupted.
What would cause that?
Well... did you kick the computer?
No.
you probably have a solid-state hard drive, right? So it's a mechanical device. I'm sorry, you probably do not have a solid-state hard drive. So you have a mechanical hard drive, and it's possible that part of the hard drive is there's a damaged area on there, and that area happened to contain either where your user data was or where Windows stores your user profile. It gets kind of complicated.
Yeah.
But the other thing, did they have you do a check your disk drive for errors? Because that's the first thing I would have done. I would have checked your disk drive for errors by going into my computer. Are you running Windows 7 on here or Windows 10?
Thank you. I was going to get to that point where I was going to ask you, what operating system is she
Windows
running?
Windows 8.
And then did she get pushed some sort of update that may have threw everything off? It may not be anything physically wrong with the device.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Doug.
Elaine, you said Windows 8?
Yes.
So how would you guys address this? If someone was to take this to your fix-it center... What would you do,
Greg?
Well, first we'd see if you have any restore points available that would work. After, of course, taking a backup of any of your data that we can get.
Right.
Well, so the first thing you would do is you would probably hook up an external device, use Explorer, and then drag, go to My Computer, the C drive, the users, and then find Elaine's user folder, and then start dragging off her documents, her My Pictures, her My Videos, My Favorites. Drag those all to the external device.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So I was just elaborating.
Yep. Essentially, anything that you can't re-download, we would make a backup of, so we can copy it back.
And the reason why we're doing this is that a lot of us are assuming that we're having a disk corruption now, and the drive could last for another 3 years or could last for another 3 minutes.
Correct.
Right? Oh, really?
Yeah. So we don't, I mean, when all of a sudden something changes, it's probably a file corruption of some type, virus, file corruption. Your hard drive could be failing. So if you notice, the first thing they said, let's save the data.
Yeah.
And then work on the system restore. So that was an excellent point. Thank you.
I would take it over to, Best Buy.
Yeah, to the Geek Squad. That's the people that you trust.
Okay, so what's the next step after the system restore?
If that does not work, then we will probably take all of the information that we backed up, clean install Windows, either a newer version or just restore it and use the same product key, and copy that information back and basically start fresh.
Right, because what a lot of people don't realize is with Windows 8, you have what's known as the actual product key is stored in the BIOS. Mm-hmm. So you can actually go to Microsoft's website, download Windows 8.1, and put it on a flash drive or a CD, and you can rebuild your computer and completely erase the hard drive and reload Windows 8.1.
I'm not computer savvy.
Well, right, exactly. This is just for the general audience.
Yeah.
And then reload your data. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So basically, it's repairable.
It may be.
I think what it is that you're at this particular point, so let's talk about it from a perspective that you are at so that you can feel more comfortable about it. You have an error that exists on the computer. It's not functioning properly. They looked at it, and they found that it was something not quite right with it, and they think they need to reload the operating system. But before they do that, they need to preserve all the things that you've created, the pictures, mm-hmm. the memories, the documents, and everything off the computer. Once they preserve all those things, then they're going to go ahead and reload the operating system back onto the computer and get you going again, and then put your data back. If the computer doesn't function properly after doing that, then they know there's probably something else wrong and probably a hardware situation, and then they'll approach that problem. But until they do these steps, they won't know for sure.
Right, right.
Well, I would say I had gotten those foreign phone calls a number of times, mm-hmm. and I basically just hung up on them and shut computer down.
Good. Okay.
Could they have done anything to my computer?
Not if you did not allow them access to
it. No, I never allowed them
Good
anything.
For you. Now, Elaine, good for you.
The last thing I'm going to say to you, Elaine, is this. Your computer's 4 years old. If you go into Best Buy or any computer store, and after you talk with them, before they start doing anything, they give you an estimate, and it says it's going to be $400 or $500 to fix this machine. It's better to go buy a new one than it is to fix
that
this
particular
one.
Point.
You can still recover your data, but you're better off buying.
All right, Elaine. Why don't you hang on the line, okay?
All right, thank you.
We'll be working just a minute. We're going to wrap things up here. We have time. We have about 15 minutes more for your phone call, so don't be bashful. Remember, the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. And here's the number again, 800-859-0957. I'd like to thank Danielle Mason, our engineer, who is doing a great job, double duty. Not only our engineer, but she's also our producer, answering phone calls. And there is lines open yet for your call at 800-859-0957. Don't forget, Sunday night, go to internetadvisor.net. The whole podcast will be there for you, along with any other kind of links that we've developed during the show. All right. By the way, just a thank you again to Doug Whitten, the Director of Cyber Defense, Computer Science, and Computer Information at Baker College Flint. Thanks so much, Doug, for being here with us.
It's an honor.
And also Greg Kemp, who's been he's a member of the cyber defense team there that's won two state championships back-to-back. Thank you for being here as well.
It's kind of like Batman and Robin, you know what I'm saying?
All right, listen, I want to go back to Elaine quickly. We've got a couple of calls coming in, and typically right at the end of the show, all sorts of calls starting up. But Elaine, I want to go back to you for a couple of comments. Doug, you had one thought that you want to share, and then Greg, you had something.
Yeah, real quick, there could be a couple of things. Obviously, it's either hardware or software, but if there's an update that was happening and that died in the middle of it, so your operating system is neither completely patched or back up. That's one possibility. The other possibility is you were mentioning that you were getting some phone calls or pop-ups that were on your screen. Even if you click like cancel, you can program those buttons to do anything. Right. So the only way to get out of those is either shut your computer down and don't click anything, right, or go to your task manager, right, and look for whatever browser that you got. If it's Internet Explorer, you can go kill all those. In other words, you wouldn't be actually clicking no on the pop-up that actually comes up.
Yeah, that's just I wanted Doug to make that point for you, Elaine, and for everybody else out there, that when the bad guys, you know, jump on board and try to shut things down or to take over your machine, you got to be careful, because clicking the X could execute all sorts of stuff.
You can write that to do anything.
Yeah, to absolutely do anything. Now, Greg, you had one other thing for Elaine before we move on to a couple of people. Go ahead.
I'd like to know what exactly you're seeing on your screen. You said you had a bunch of icons that came up that you hadn't been seeing before. Can you give us some examples of those?
Can you hear Elaine?
Pardon?
Hi, he was asking you, what were some of the icons that appeared on the screen?
Well, they weren't recognizable because they were icons that I had never used.
Okay.
Had fish, connect to music. I don't recall the others.
Okay.
But the other thing is that about an hour later after we tried to do a system restore, my husband went in there and the screen was black. It wouldn't even go on.
Okay. Hmm.
You said there was an icon with fish.
And connected music.
That almost sounds to me like either you've got a malware infection.
Yeah.
Or I don't know what brand it is, but a lot of the times there'll be a restore partition that has the like the factory settings on it. Maybe a button got bumped and it restored to those settings.
Yep.
Well, I don't use that computer. My husband does.
Okay.
And I don't know what he did.
So it sounds like he's taking it to Best Buy,
Honey, it's time for you to visit Best Buy. All right, Elaine, I'm going to move on because we have a couple other people who want to get on the air, okay?
Thanks so much.
Thank you. So hope we, in the midst of all of that, we've given you something.
Let us know how that works out.
Yes, please. And you can get hold of us by going to the Contact Us button on our homepage at internetadvisor.net. All right, I want to go to Mike in Royal Oak. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. We're close to the end. What can we help you with quickly?
Suppose I take all the data or my own personal stuff off the hard drive and put it on a USB flash drive.
Yes.
And if there's a virus on any of that stuff, how can I get it off the flash drive later on?
Well, if you have up-to-date antivirus software on your computer right now, if you attempt to copy that data from your computer to the external flash drive, your antivirus is going to kick in there and say, wait a second, there's a virus here, okay? If it knows about that virus, an example.
But what if it's not up to date and it's old?
Well, then if you try to access it from a modern computer with up-to-date antivirus and you plug it in there and you try dragging those documents to the new computer and it has up-to-date antivirus, it's going to say the same thing. Wait a second, there's a virus on here. We're not copying this data.
So
any time that there's data going in and out of the computer, whether or not that's through the internet or browser or from an external flash drive, that's the purpose of your antivirus software, is to actually monitor and scan all that data or those documents or pictures or files or programs.
Okay.
Is there any way to completely erase whatever you put on a USB drive?
Yeah, I have a 16-ounce hammer at home. That's what I use.
Okay. Can you mail it?
Get your own.
If I want to completely erase what's on the... And I set the same thing with hard drives. But now they have shredders for hard drives. But if you really want to make sure that something is irretrievable, you either use the 12-pound sledge or a 16-ounce hammer. Yeah.
Sometimes you want to put it in a cardboard box because it'll smash and all the pieces go all over the place.
Use it again, for your...
No, if you want to use it again... No. Traditionally, what I have been using...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Instead of physical force, you can go to... look on the internet at Google for Derek's, and it's spelled Darik's, boot and nuke. And what you can do is you can download that program either to a USB stick, or you can make a CD from it, or...
What about copying a movie on it completely reformatting, and then copying a movie again on it and reformatting?
That's doing the same thing.
I like to run Derek's, and I'll tell you the reason why. If you copy a movie, you have to make sure that movie is going to fill the entire drive end to end.
Pretty darn close, anyway.
Yeah, and if it doesn't, the data he may not want to get out may be in that spot where it doesn't write. Yep. Or if you use something like Derek's, it's going to write the entire drive, and it's going to write it 32 times, or it can write it to the Department of Defense standards, whatever way you want to go.
Will you spell that again?
Derek, Darik's. And the product is called Boot, B-O-O-T, the letter N as in Nancy, and then Nuke. Nuke.
How much is that?
Free.
Absolutely.
And you put that on first before you use the USB?
No, it's a little utility that you run that says, do you wish to use this utility, and then specify what device you want to run it against, and then you select your USB drive or an external hard drive. And it actually runs a program that writes a bunch of zeros and ones randomly to the external device.
Completely filling pulling it so that it, anything that's there is gone.
Yes, correct. And that's it can do it multiple times. If you wanted to fill it 32, write it all 32 times, write it all 32 times over and over and over again until you can't read from that again, it can do that for you.
How does it know when to stop?
When you tell it.
There you go.
Well, the thing is, you got to be careful when you have a flash drive. Flash drives usually only have 10,000, 100,000 writes to it. So Derek's boot nuke was something that was...
for mechanical drives.
It was for mechanical drives. But nowadays, we have flash drives, which, you know, when you write to them, it's 10,000 times or 100,000 times. If you let this thing run overnight, you're gonna have a dead USB drive the next morning because you've let it run 200,000 read writes.
You can tell it to run to the Department of Defense standards, which I think is a 32-pass write, and that'll be fine. You'll be just
fine. So Derek's boot and nuke is dban.org.
dban.org.
So Derek boot and nuke, right? You know.
All right.
Now, keep in mind that will wipe all of the files on the drive.
Yeah.
Yep. And you will not be able to recover them.
All right. And then that's the important point. Folks, that the voice you just heard there is Greg Kempf, student at Flint campus of Baker College. Thank you so much for being with us. Best of luck to you with the team as you go on. And also thanks so much, Doug Witten, Director of Cyber Defense and Computer Science up there in Flint at the Baker College.
It was an honor being here.
Thank you. Delightful having you guys there. I want Dan and Basim, you hang on. We're going to get to you after the program. And for the rest of you, you can get hold of us with the Contact Us button at the InternetAdvisor.net site. Daniel, thank you again for being our engineer, and the rest of you, have a great week.